Welcome to the Naval Academy Museum's Warrior Writers Podcast. I am your host, Sal, from the blog Commander Salamander, and this 14-part series will take you decade by decade, starting with the 1870s, discussing the personalities, technologies, and events that helped shape today's U.S. Navy. This podcast coincides with the Naval Academy Museum's exhibit, Warrior Writers, the U.S. Naval Institute, open from September 10th, 2015, through January 31st, 2016. Our guest for each episode leading us through the decades will be first Naval Academy History Professor Emeritus and noted historian Craig Simons, who is awarded the Samuel Eliot Morison Prize for his novel Neptune, The Allied Invasion of Europe and the D-Day Landing, and is also author of the upcoming book, A Concise History of the U.S. Navy. Craig will be followed by the director of the Naval Academy Museum, Claude Barrabe. One thing we've done in this series, Craig, is we've broken things up because want to eat an elephant, you got to take one bite at a time. And we've broken it up into decades. And when you look at the 1990s, there's a pretty clear break that almost coincides with the calendar. And in many ways, the 1990s and that post-Cold War experience came to an end on the 10th of September 2001. Where I was at that time, up at the 5th Fleet AOR, on the 10th of September, all the people were thinking about is the secondary and third order effects of the first Gulf War, Desert Storm in the first part of that decade, the embargo against Iraq up in the Northern Arabian Gulf, doing non-compliant boardings, doing air operations right on the border. And, of course, the next day on September 11, 2001, everything changed, and we're still kind of in that phase. When you look at leaving the 1990s and that kind of a clear break that we saw a little bit into the next decade, what are some of the challenges that you see the Navy is going to have as it embarks into the rest of the 21st century? What threats are there on the horizon, and what do you think we need to pay attention to?
Well, you're absolutely right about that. We all remember where we were that day, 9/11, as it's come to be known. I was in my office at the Naval Academy when someone came to the door and said, "You got to come down and look and see what's going on television. All hell's breaking loose." And it did have a profound impact, obviously, on the way we live even our ordinarily daily lives. Security was enhanced dramatically across the country. And for the Navy and the Navy Marine Corps team, it raises many questions. Some of those inherent to the dissolution of the Soviet Union, in that there are a wide variety of hot spots around the world, no single clear enemy with a capital and a diplomatic corps that you can deal with. It changed the game dramatically. And I think the impact of that, there are a couple of ways. One I'll mention specifically, and we've already touched on it, and that is the jointness along with special operations. The way to deal with terrorists who are stateless and don't have ambassadors and don't have all the impedimenta of a nation that we can deal with is that you have to come up with means that don't follow in the usual channels. I think the beginning of the special operations concerns goes back to the 1980s with the Iranian crisis, when the collapse of Operation Eagle Claw showed the importance of creating a special operations command, which did happen in 1984, SOCOM as it's called, to use the acronym Special Operations Command, and the operational arm of which is JSOC, Joint Special Operations Command, and that includes Delta Force and SEAL Team 6 and the 24th Special Tactical Unit of the Air Force and Joint Aviation Unit. So almost as an independent service now, the Army, Navy, Air Force, and Special Operations Command, which is designed, I think, particularly to deal with these kinds of stateless enemies, and its section of the budget has grown dramatically since 9/11, and they're almost a separate service these days, in terms at least of their support and capability. So I think that's one way. The other is that you always have to keep your eye out for future potential enemies in the world. With the collapse of the Soviet Union, Russia, no longer the Soviet Union, nevertheless remains a challenge for the United States in various places around the world. We've seen that a lot these last several weeks with what's going on in Syria. So there is that. And, of course, there is China. China has an enormous economy, a large population, largest in the world, and their economy is growing, although it's hit a couple of bumps in having some growth problems lately. But it's only reasonable, I think, to keep a wary eye out, a weather eye out, as a sailor would say, for the possible growth of China. China's navy, by the way, rather curiously, is named the People's Liberation Army Navy. People's Liberation Army that defeated Chiang Kai-shek in the War of 1949. Its seagoing branch is the People's Liberation Army Navies, or PLAN, if you would. They seem to have aggressive intent in the South China Sea with laying claim to the Spratly Islands and so forth. But it's important to remember, too, that at this moment, in 2015, as we speak, the PLAN, the Chinese Navy, is significantly weaker than the United States. And the United States remains the only great naval power, global naval power in the world. So someday, perhaps, we may keep an eye out for China, but not right now.
And with that note, Craig, that will, I think, bring our series here with the Warrior Riders and U.S. Naval Institute to a close. It's been a pleasure over the last few weeks to spend a little bit of time talking decade by decade. I wanted to give you one last opportunity, though, for our listeners. Talk to us a bit about your upcoming book, and what do you think it brings to the conversation for everybody?
Thanks for the plug.
Yes, sir.
Well, I have a very short little book coming out that's part of a series that Oxford University Press puts out called A Very Short Introduction To, and then they have a whole variety of things. They have one on any subject you can think of, and they're quite short. They're about 130 pages and really designed to be a very concise history. And the title that they've given my entry, which is A Concise History of the U.S. Navy, is exactly that. It'll come out in paperback in another year or so as a very short history of, but right now it's coming out in November 2015 as A Concise History of the U.S. Navy. But I'll tell you what's been filling up my time lately is I'm contracted to write a full-length global history of World War II at sea. All nations, all sides, all powers, all theaters, and that, my friend, is an enormous challenge, but I'm having a wonderful time working on it.
Well, that's great stuff, and we all look forward to seeing that, and I hope you have a great rest of the year.
Thank you, Sal. Enjoyed it.
Been a pleasure. Claude, for our last episode of the Warrior Rider series, of course, we're just going to spend some time talking about the century that we're a decade and a half into, and kind of what Craig and I framed our discussion about it. Yeah, you can be pedantic and talk about the 2000s, but really what has marked this new century were the attacks on September 11th, 2001. For the modern period, for lack of a better phrase, what strikes you about the riders that we find in the last 15 years, and also at the museum, what things do you have that represent well the latest time period?
Mm-hmm. You know, Sal, I think I have to frame it with some individual personal thoughts, because I think they're so common among so many of us, because I remember September 11th driving in my car on a beautiful sunny morning to the Office of Naval Research for my 2 weeks of reserve duty. Early in the morning, we were watching through VTC the brief coming from the Pentagon. And suddenly, Commander Dan Schanauer, who was the CNOIP briefer to Admiral Porterfield, Director of Naval Intelligence, saying, "Admiral, we've got to cut over to CNN. Something's going on in New York." And nobody ever heard from him again. Dan Chanower and the rest of the crew were killed in that attack. And then, of course, we were all who were there mobilized for the next year. So I think, as I mentioned in the previous podcast, you can't anticipate what's going to happen. All you can do is train for your job and do it when things happen, whether it is Pearl Harbor, whether it is the post-Civil War era, whether it is the explosion on the Maine, whether it is the fall of the Soviet Union, or for the 2000s, which we're talking about, 9/11. Nobody expected it. And I think what has struck me most with regard to the Warrior Writer exhibit, this exhibit on the history of ideas and junior officers thinking time and again about strategies, operations, platforms, technologies, personnel, decade after decade, trying to learn more about themselves, the Navy, the Marine Corps, and the country and where it needs to go. When we were assembling this exhibit, of course, you can go online and you can see some of the exhibits, and we have this chronological. So there is a large text area for the 1870s, for the 1880s, etc. And then associated artifacts. When you get to the 2000s, I didn't notice it until after we had put this together. And we have about five or six photos for each of these decades. And I noticed something really strange about these pictures. Again, it wasn't intentional by any stretch of the imagination. All of the officers who are represented in the 2000s are in desert camouflage. And that doesn't happen at any time in our history. Why? Because we are in places that we didn't expect to be. We didn't expect to be in Afghanistan. We didn't expect to be in Iraq. And in fact, for a time, I'm not sure how long a period this was, but I do recall it was toward the middle of the 2000s, when we actually had more sailors ashore in CENTCOM than we did on ships. And again, I'm not sure when in our history that has happened. So obviously, the 2000s are dealing with the impact of 9/11, of insurgencies, and what eventually happened in Iraq. And of course, we're still here at the end of 2015 in Afghanistan. The writers, to some degree, reflect that. We have Captain Emmett Lamb, United States Marine Corps, Naval Academy, class of 2007, who was a SWO, and he ends up serving in Afghanistan. And then writing a book, an article in Proceedings about restructuring Navy boarding parties. Of course, this is before he goes to Afghanistan. But he loaned us an item, some shrapnel that he had in Afghanistan. Captain David Donello, United States Marine Corps, Naval Academy class of 1998, had served in Iraq. And we have one of his Moleskine notebooks. And in fact, I like Dave, always carry a Moleskine notebook with me, whether I'm writing notes on my fiction work or nonfiction. And Dave ends up going to Iraq, serving, returning. And based on his Moleskine notebooks, he wrote a book called Blood Stripes, The Grunt's View of the War in Iraq. He leaves the Marine Corps because he wants to write full time. And he continues to have a very successful career as a writer. His second book was The Border, Exploring the U.S.-Mexican Divide. And he continues to write articles and books. We see junior officers writing from a very different perspective. This is the decade or so of the war memoirs to a degree we haven't seen since World War II. We saw some of it, with Jim Webb, a Naval Academy graduate, about his time in Vietnam. But, you know, this is the time where we see the memoirs of Nate Fick, who wrote One Bullet Away, a Marine in Afghanistan and Iraq. An Army officer, Craig Mullaney, who writes The Unforgiving Minute. We see the class of 2002 from the Naval Academy write In the Shadows of Greatness. So these junior officers are not only writing about the world, they're writing their memoirs, and I think it'll be a very interesting perspective 40 and 50 years from now as they continue to reflect on what that meant to them. We also have some very influential articles during this period. I would argue that one of the most influential was written by a P-3 pilot, eventually becomes director of the Naval History and Heritage Command, and Naval Institute Press Author of the Year for his book on Theodore Roosevelt's Naval Diplomacy, which this was written by Jerry Hendricks, who retired about a year or so ago as a Navy captain. That book on Theodore Roosevelt came out of his PhD, which he largely wrote while he was on deployment at sea. But his pivotal piece is By Fords, Not Ferraris. Eventually, about less than a year ago, I guess it was back in January, he and Brian McGrath debate at the United States Naval Academy on the future of aircraft carriers. And that debate has led to subsequent studies here in late 2015 about the future of aircraft carrier air wings. So I think it's very important that you're starting to see this thought process emerge yet again and really being refreshed out of necessity. Brian McGrath loaned us a statuette from his time as captain of the USS Bulkley. It's a statuette. It's a Wolfpack statuette that he had given out to everyone in his wardroom. We have a Nook from B.J. Armstrong, Commander B.J. Armstrong, Naval Academy class of 1999. And we asked for his e-reader, on which he read the works of Alfred Thayer Mahan, and he would eventually put out a work called 21st Century Mahan, and is now writing the 21st Century series. We've seen a couple of those that he's editing, one on 21st Century Sims, another one on 21st Century Ellis, and we're going to continue to seeing this for the foreseeable future. We have wonderful writers like Captain Dave Adams, who loaned us a hammer that was given to him by one of his COs. We leave it upright where it's on one side it says, "I love you." And on the other side, where people can't see it, especially some of our younger visitors, it says, "Nail the Bastards." And he was the prize essay winner in both 1997 and 2007. So if I were to say what changed during the 2000s, I would say it's a refreshing era for Navy and Marine Corps thought about what our role is in the world. Where are we going? These are the same questions, again, that authors for the United States Naval Institute have been asking since 1873 when it was founded. We aren't finished yet. We're going to keep asking those questions in the future. We're starting to see, for example, more articles on China in the past decade. I don't think there's been an issue without an article about China, just as there was I don't think there were any Proceedings magazines without an article or two on the Soviet Union. What does the future have in store? We don't know. We never know. But we know that there is a cadre of officers and sailors out there who are thinking, who are writing, who are speaking, who are discussing, not arguing. They're debating. And we very much hope that in the future that this new generation of officer and sailor will have the same kind of answers that they did in 1873 or 1900 or 1941.
And Claude, with that, we, believe it or not, finally wind up the Warrior Riders podcast series that ran from 1870 up to today. If you could take a moment to remind the listeners how long the exhibit will be going on at the U.S. Naval Academy Museum, and what does the Naval Academy Museum have in store for 2016?
Yeah, the Warrior Riders exhibit will be on display until January 31st of 2016. After that, it is removed and will unlikely be seen again for the foreseeable future. So if you want to see it, please do so. Please go to our website. usna.edu/museum and look for the exhibits, and you'll see a few pictures. And I think what we will do here in the next week or two is I'll do a video tour of the exhibit, so that we have a record of it. And for those of your listeners who are unable to come to Annapolis to see the exhibit firsthand, at least they'll be able to see some of the things we've been talking about for the past few months on this podcast series. What do we have coming up? Well, we're going to be doing at the Naval Academy Museum is having a special exhibit every year running for about 6 months. This was our first test. This was our pilot project, one that had to be done. And the way I'm structuring it as a director is that we're going to have a different theme every year. So this year's theme was the history of ideas as told through the Naval Institute. Next year will be more social history and Naval Academy history when in June we open an exhibit commemorating the 40th anniversary of when women were first admitted and came in as plebes to the United States Naval Academy, and that'll run for 6 months. The following year we'll do strictly military history writ large, and we'll have a 6-month exhibit in 2017 on the history of the United States in the Western Pacific for the past 200 years. Now, I realize that some of your listeners will say, well, the centennial of World War I will happen during that year. That's true. But keep in mind, the museum is a pretty big place. We've got two full decks, and we do have a special exhibit space planned for commemorating the century, the centenary of the First World War, and then the United States Navy and Marine Corps' role during that war. So every year it'll be a very different theme, but trying to address the various audiences that we have, not only at the United States Naval Academy, but the general public, and we serve both audiences. That is what we do, and we are open 362 days a year, with the exception of Christmas, New Year's, and Thanksgiving. We get about 100,000 visitors coming through our doors every year, and we very much hope that the listeners of this podcast are able to join us at some point here in Annapolis and see many of the great things we have on exhibit at the two decks of our current exhibit space.
And Claude, it's really been a pleasure talking to both you and Craig over the course of the series. And thank you very much for the opportunity for me to be able to help out.
Thank you very much for all you've done for us. We appreciate it. And thank you also to Craig Simons, certainly one of the most respected and best minds in naval history today.
And thank you very much to all of our listeners. And we hope you have an opportunity to visit the U.S. Naval Academy Museum. And if you don't already, be a member of the Naval Institute, subscribe to the magazine, and learn about the future with the rest of us. Until next time, cheers.